E3 2019 Day 2 Recap, and more coming up on today's episode of Lays and Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadget, and gaming news. That's right, this is Lays and Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe and follow button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest episode. And hold off on that like button if you're watching the video until you get to a section of the show that you actually, well, enjoy. So, as for podcasts, if you're listening to this and you happen to enjoy it, be sure to leave us a review out on iTunes and Google. That would be greatly appreciated. As for what happened today, well, we got a spattering of news. We're going to cover a couple of things at E3 today. Not so much because all the press announcements are over. Essentially, all the big hubbub that was everything to be hyped up at the event is over. And while it could have been better, at the same time, there was a lot of good stuff that came out. I don't know. E3 this year was kind of an in-between year. What do you guys think? Let me know down in the comment section down below. But we'll be taking a look at that, specifically Cyberpunk 2077. We'll also be taking a look at Google Stadia and Microsoft's Project xCloud. We'll also be taking a look at apparently an Apple MacBook Pro costing about $10,000, but the fix was free. Also, we'll be taking a look at Borderlands 3, why two humans return on Xbox One is such a big deal, how PC games overpowered Xbox, PS4, and others at E3 this year, and finally, we'll be taking a look at, well, Sony's E3 announcement. Well, it happened without you noticing it, but before we can get to all of that, yes, did you know? The section of the show where we find out, well, how much do you know? My question to you is, what is the max score you can get in Pac-Man? Any takers? Guess a wild number. I bet you won't even get it right. 3,333,360 points is the max score you can get in Pac-Man. It's one of the most popular games ever made. The first person to get the perfect score in this game was Billy Mitchell in 1999. You want to know how long it took him to get it? 6 hours. 6 hours of playing Pac-Man. Oh, well, I really got to up my game. Well, there you go. Moving right along to today in tech history, being that today is June 12th, 2019. On this day in 1967, the Soviet probe Venera 4 is successfully launched. On October 18th, it will enter Venus's atmosphere. Well, it will become the first space probe to successfully return atmospheric data from another planet. Definitely impressive at that time. Also, on this day in 1997, 3Com and US Robotics completed their merger. In describing the largest business deal thus far in the networking industry, 3Com's CEO Eric Bemhow said the combination of 3Com and US Robotics creates a networking powerhouse in the continuing development of enterprise and carrier networks, while helping usher in a new era of simple, fast network access for small business and consumers. US Robotics works focused on remote access networking and modems, while 3Com had independently concentrated on network interface cards and network systems. Obviously, it was a success, and things seem to be going along fine. We don't really hear much about them anymore, but that's just the way the cookie crumbles. With that out of the way, let's head on over to today's feature story. Feature story. Nope, it has nothing to do with my eyes, how they look. I know you're going to ask me that question. It's allergy related. There's nothing I can do about it. I tried, but apparently the cure is not stuffing your face in tree pollen. It doesn't work. Anyways, how Keanu Reeves became involved in Cyberpunk 2077, if I can get the title right. Well, yeah, Microsoft did a lot to keep him under wraps, but yeah, everyone had their breath taken away when prolific movie star Keanu Reeves revealed Cyberpunk 2077's release date on Microsoft's E3 2019 stage. We know that Reeves will play the legendary rocker boy Johnny Silverhand, but how CD Projekt Red got the actor to be involved with the upcoming first-person RPG has remained a mystery, and I'm sure you're probably wondering that yourself. Until now, we sat down with senior-level designer Miles Tost to talk about how the Polish developer recruited Reeves. Now, it wasn't me. GameSpot wrote this article, so if you are interested in all the articles or this one covered on today's show, head on over to technewsgadget.net. Now, Reeves is a new addition to the game, only being approached about a year ago or so. When asked why Reeves and not some other action star, Tost said that Reeves was the perfect fit. Tost mentions his rich background in cyberpunky stories, titles like Johnny Mnemonic and The Matrix come to mind, and says the roles he's been playing really fit the team's vision for the game, calling it a natural match made in heaven. Now, when asked about Reeves' reaction to CD Projekt Red's inquiry, Tost said Reeves is a, quote, super cool guy who seems really into this and very passionate about the project and the role that he's playing. Tost recalls a vivid moment during the pitch process where Reeves was really getting into the role and acting mannerisms Johnny Silverhand might actually have. Now, it's worth noting that while Cyberpunk 2077 is Reeves' most recent video game casting, he's appeared in a handful of titles before, including action-adventure game Enter the Matrix, cooperative first-person shooter Payday 2, and big-name battle royale game Fortnite. Yep. Now, while the game won't come out until next year, Tost said he's confident the team will pull the project together and ship when it's ready. Our studio is one that really puts quality above everything, and it's also reassuring for me as a developer. I know we will not ship this game if it's not ready by the time we decide to ship it. Now, with that, I think games, gamers specifically, will be able to expect the kind of quality we had with The Witcher 3, and then some. Cyberpunk 2077 will launch on April 16th, 2020, for PC, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. CD Projekt Red previously announced a North American-only PC version, but they obviously changed their mind on that amid fan outcry. So, there you go. That's how that happened. And in case you didn't know the story behind how Keanu Reeves got involved in the project, well, now you know. Question is, did you know about this? Or is this just pure speculation? I don't know. Let me know down in the comment section what your thoughts are. You've been noticing. I keep saying, leave a comment, leave a like, something. Because that obviously helps with the whole engagement factor. And obviously, if it's something you enjoy, I'd love to hear you guys talking about it. It can't just be me talking about it here. It'd be kind of boring after a while, wouldn't it? I mean, unless you like hearing me talk, in which case, great. But I'd love to hear more so feedback from you guys, so with that, I'll leave it at that, and we'll move on to the next article. All right, so apparently Google Stadia and Microsoft's Project xCloud was, the game streaming dream that was inside us all along. Now, if, like a rapidly growing segment of the world's population, you're the type of warped individual who spends the majority of your free time playing video games, probably apparent we live in interesting times, and this year's E3 reflected that fact. Now, E3 2019 wasn't the rock-rolling roller coaster ride we've come to expect in recent years. And it kind of makes sense because E3 is changing, because video games are changing. Also, 2019 is kind of a gap year as we wait for a new Microsoft Xbox and Sony PlayStation, both expected sometime next year. Now, many of the most exciting games announced this week, like Halo Infinite and Cyberpunk 2077, are due next year as well, along with, well, a bunch of other announcements. But if you broaden the scope of your thinking to dog years, E3 actually gave us plenty to chew on. Now, in some ways, this year's E3 was a moratorium on the future of gaming. If you read the headline, the story is clear. The way we're going to play video games is about to change. Now, the race to become the Netflix of gaming is on. Yes, it's all about game streaming, folks. Or is it? Well, the truth is a little bit more tangled than we would like. On the one hand, we have Google Stadia, a streaming service that promises to forever change the way we consume video games, albeit we still have to pay 60 flipping bucks for a full-time game. We still haven't seen a company with pockets as deep as this enter the gaming sphere since Microsoft launched the original Xbox in 2001. Now, speaking of Microsoft, its Project xCloud is what's on the other hand. It's another streaming service, and it complements the upcoming Xbox console while also promising to forever change the way we consume video games as well. And that's not all. There's a bunch of subscription gaming services popping up, from Xbox Game Pass to Google Stadia Pro to Ubisoft's Uplay Plus. Together, they're offering us a chance to live the dream of chucking video game consoles in the bin and solely streaming games direct to our devices. Netflix style. The second and foundation for what's to come has already been built. It's been under your noses all along. Now, let's talk about Microsoft. One of the biggest surprises of E3 was the announcement of Project Scarlet, Microsoft's next Xbox console. On stage at E3, Phil Spencer announced that it'll be a big, powerful machine designed for 8K gaming at 120 frames per second. To some extent, ooh, cool, but like, any new features other than that? Well, but the biggest surprise is Project Scarlet will launch in the year 2020 with an optical drive. So, what's that telling us? Microsoft, which was actually the first major player to launch a diskless console with its Xbox One S All Digital Edition last month, albeit 7 years too late, is still tethering its next-gen console to past technology. Microsoft, quite rightly, doesn't want to leave any consumer behind. Not everyone has lightning-fast internet connections. But the harsh reality is that the global games market at the retail and consumer level is barely prepared for an all-digital market, let alone a bold Netflix-style streaming future where gaming is nothing more than an app on your TV, phone, or tablet. The death of the games console has been greatly exaggerated. That said, Project xCloud works, and it works pretty well. Microsoft has been offering demos of Halo 5 Guardians and Resident Evil 7 using an Xbox controller attached to an Android device at E3, and the performance was nearly flawless. The technology exists, it works, but Project xCloud is going into public testing this year. It'll be a thing, but if Microsoft is right, it'll merely augment the console gaming experience. It really won't replace it, not for a while, at least, and then there comes Stadia, saying, yeah, you can play it on anything. You can play it on a computer, you can play it on a phone, you can play it on a bunch of other stuff. And you pay $129 for a game controller and Chromecast Ultra. And from that point, you can do one of two things. You can use Stadia to buy full-price games using Google Play and then stream and play them, or you can pay $9.99 a month for Stadia Pro, a service that has a number of rotating games that you can stream for free. Not every game, some games. There's still a little bit of confusion between that. I hope Google figures that out soon enough. In other words, sort of like Xbox Game Pass, which already exists and has done so since June of 2017. The only real difference is that with Stadia, you'll be streaming, but Xbox Game Pass requires you to download for now. Still likely that Xbox Game Pass, a service that, according to late reports in 2018, has millions of subscribers, will let players stream games using Project xCloud in the near future. So, well, in short, a video game stream dream was inside all of us all along. And, well, it's just finally now coming to light. So, I don't know. What do you guys think? Do you think this is the future? Do you think we're going down the wrong path? Is there something else we need to be looking at entirely? Is there something we're missing? I don't know. I mean, I definitely like the ideas here that are being presented of streaming on any console or device from anywhere. Although, do I really want to be able to play some games on every device? I mean, there are some games where I prefer to play only on PC. And that's true. There are some games that I only prefer playing on the PlayStation 4. That's true as well. I don't have an Xbox, so I can't make a comparison there. And there are some games that I only want to be able to play on my phone. Do I want to really have a crossover? I don't know. I mean, because here's the thing. The one trade-off that I don't like is being able to play it on any kind of device. You might have a whole controller connected. You can connect a controller to your phone. You can connect a controller to your TV. You can connect a controller to your computer, which that aspect of it makes it easier for you to get better at the game with the controller that you have, depending on if you're playing on your phone, a TV, or the computer. But for some things, I like having a keyboard and a mouse setup, and I don't like how things and buttons are different on other systems. So it's kind of this weird mush. I don't know. We'll figure out what happens soon enough. Hopefully, I don't know. I could be wrong. We'll just have to see how it sorts itself out. All right, moving on to some gadget news. Apparently, Apple spent an estimated $10,000 trying to repair a MacBook Pro when the fix was incredibly simple. And, for various reasons, this shows a limitation of Apple's latest MacBook designs. Here we go. Now, when photographer Greg Benn started having issues with his MacBook Pro, he did what most people would, brought it to Apple for repairs. The issue Ben's MacBook Pro display wouldn't turn on and remained dark no matter what he did. Not even Apple could figure it out. Ben's went 2 weeks without his work machine while Apple twice replaced the computer's logic board, the board that contains the machine's important chips, as well as some cable replacements. Eventually, Apple decided to just replace the MacBook Pro with a fresh unit, similarly valued at $7,000. Fortunately for Ben's, his original laptop was under warranty, so he didn't have to pay a dime. But he estimates that if he did have to foot the bill, it cost him about 10 grand, which, well, tracks about the same trying to replace the Mac's logic board. Clearly, it would have really stunk if it was out of warranty. But finally, after all that drama, an Apple genius shone a flashlight at the screen of his original problematic unit and found the real answer to the problem. Are you ready for it? The computer's display brightness was turned all the way down. I know, when I read this article, I had to share it. Indeed, the last time he had turned off his computer, the brightness was set to its lowest setting as he had his MacBook Pro connected to external monitors. Oh, well, the root cause of this MacBook Pro issue, which involves several expensive repairs that really didn't actually fix anything, is absurdly basic. But if you take a step back, it's not entirely Ben's fault, and it's not entirely the Apple technicians either. So whose fault is it? It appears that Ben's faced a perfect storm of glitches that led him, as well as Apple, to think his MacBook Pro was defective or broken. The screen didn't light up when he turned on his monitor. The keyboard didn't light up. His external monitor didn't turn on as it normally does. The screen's brightness wasn't responding to the brightness controls on his external keyboard, and he tried some in-depth troubleshooting that many, if not most, Mac users have never heard of, like resetting the system's PRAM, in case you're wondering. And perhaps the most important glitch, the touch bar on Ben's MacBook Pro, that touchscreen above the keyboard, failed to show up when he turned on his display, which prevented him from raising the screen's brightness. But it raises a larger question about the MacBook Pro. Speaking to Business Insider, Ben's suggested that the entire repair debacle could have been avoided had his maxed out $7,000 2018 MacBook Pro with a touch bar came with an old-fashioned physical brightness button instead of the touch-sensitive strip touch bar that replaces them on its highest-end models. Had the laptop come with that, I absolutely would have tried that option. The problem that Ben faces is that the touch bar on his MacBook Pro, which would have offered the option to turn up the brightness, wouldn't turn on until after he logged in. And with the screen out of commission, he didn't know the machine was on the login screen, waiting for him to log in. It gets better. A fully operational MacBook Pro should have displayed the touch bar where you'd normally find the screen brightness controls. If you turn on a MacBook Pro with a touch bar at your office, and the touch bar showed up, complete with brightness controls, wouldn't have a problem here. But it is possible that recent updates to the Mac OS operating system changed how the touch bar works. In his blog post, Ben says that the issue may have had something to do with the specialized software that he uses for his work, like a screen calibration tool, meaning that most MacBook Pro users are unlikely to run into the same issue, but one of Ben's friends even tried and failed to duplicate one of the issues. In hindsight, after finally knowing the root cause of the issue, we might all ask why Ben's didn't try logging into his computer by typing his password even if the screen was black, but everything is so much clearer in hindsight, and Ben's laptop was experiencing glitches that simply refused to let him control his screen's brightness. Ben's experience serves as good feedback for Apple and as a reminder that physical buttons have their place. Business Insider contacted Apple for comment on Ben's experience, but did not hear back. So, this is great for you guys. If you happen to have a problem down the road with your MacBook Pro and you're listening to this right now, log this information away in your noggin for a later date. But if you happen to experience that problem, try typing in your password and hitting enter, and it might just load everything else up, and then you can change your screen brightness or deliberately buy a MacBook Pro that has the physical brightness and controls as a button on your laptop. So, problem solved, but oh my goodness, the amount of stupidity that goes around with it. Ay, ay, ay. All right, moving on to Borderlands 3. I guess it's a frenetic love letter to mayhem. So if you guys are all excited, Borderlands 3 will squeeze every last drop of endorphin from your pituitary glands, and that's before you reach the boss fight. Now, the author here with Engadget went on a hands-on with the latest iteration of Gearbox's software's frenetic first-person shooter RPG at E3 today and walked away with an epiphany. Shut down the polls. This might just be 2019's Game of the Year. Now, if you're wondering, do you have pictures that go along with this article that you're reading? Yeah, head on over to youtube.com/technewsget and you can see the whole video of the show. Borderlands 3 remains true to its predecessor in terms of playstyle. You command one of four unique Vault Hunters, each with their own special abilities and powers, shooting and looting your way across the galaxy. In this edition, however, you're looking for more than hidden treasures. Players must also contend with and eventually take down a dangerous cult known as the Children of the Vault and their psychopathic twin leaders. Now, this is easier than it sounds, given that you're the one with the guns, quite literally all of them. Borderlands 3 features an unconscionable amount of weaponry, 17 million unique firearms altogether. Now, during their demo, they fought as Amara, the Siren Brawler, outfitted with a fully automatic assault rifle and a more powerful but single-shot hunting rifle. The aim, movement, and firing controls were all pretty tight, but shifting from firing from the hip to aiming down the scope was smooth enough as well that it didn't really pull your aim away from the enemy center mass. Headshotting from distance is mind-blowingly consistent thanks to the accurate aiming mechanism, while bludgeoning enemies in close quarters is a boot-squishingly satisfying affair. And you'll have plenty of opportunities to hone your shooting skills as you face off against veritable hordes of berserking enemies. They must have dropped close to 50 foes in the first 5 minutes of the demo, so if you're excited about that, before facing off against the mini-boss, Mouthpiece. He came at him with a mini missile firing shield and acoustic attacks from the array of oversized speakers lining the walls of his lair, but quickly dropped as they circled around behind and shot him in the head until he stopped twitching. Now the game will offer single player and both online and split screen co-op. In fact, the Gearbox team has taken great efforts to make Borderlands 3 as social as possible. Now, you'll be able to sell weapons to your friends via the in-game gun vending machines or mail them items directly. The game will also feature friend-based matchmaking to streamline the lobby process. Character customization and personalization are also a big feature of the game as well. You'll find hundreds of skins and helmets for your fighter, each customizable with primary, secondary, and tertiary color tones. That extends to your weapons as well. You'll be able to apply custom colors and skins to any weapon in your arsenal. Borderlands 3 arrives on the PS4, Xbox One, and PC on Friday, September 13th, 2019. So, if you guys are excited about Borderlands 3, if you haven't hit the pre-order button already, might this convince you to pre-order it now? Very well, could be shaping up to be Game of the Year. Alright, moving on to, well, the wild story behind a free Xbox One game Microsoft announced at E3. So, when Microsoft announced the last batch of Xbox 360 titles made compatible with Xbox One, one game in particular stood out, and not just because it's free. Too Human. Yes, Too Human, the action RPG, as it was supposed to be the first of a trilogy, where Norse gods are actually cybernetically enhanced humans or something. The game was noteworthy for many other things too, unfortunately all of them bad. It all starts with a decade of a development hell and ends with a lawsuit against Epic Games, which profoundly backfired on defunct maker Silicon Knights and its volatile boss, Dennis Dyack. Now the epilogue finds the game reanimated after being sued into oblivion and given away for free. So in between, Too Human must have set some kind of record for being an exclusive project for all three platform makers across three consecutive console generations, beginning as a PlayStation game, moving Nintendo's GameCube, and ultimately an Xbox 360 exclusive published by Microsoft Game Studios, now known as Xbox Game Studios. So, forget being free, that part is easily explainable by the fact that Microsoft owns it. The game's return to any marketplace is what's inexplicable. Silicon Knights sued Epic in 2007, a year before Too Human launched. The lawsuit made the convoluted allegation that Too Human's development was prolonged because Epic wasn't properly supporting the Unreal Engine 3 that Silicon Knights had been using. The studio further claimed that Epic was instead directing all of its Unreal revenue and development effort into Gears of War, which Silicon Knights called a direct competitor to Too Human. Now, Too Human released in August of 2008 and was presently, well, pooped upon by everyone for issues like repetitive gameplay, strange use of the right analog stick in combat, and even an unskippable way too long death sequence. Mostly the game did not live up to a decade's worth of development or hype from, well, their lead person, Epic later countersued Silicon Knights, which had ended its relationship with Epic as it continued development on Too Human. Epic said the game was still substantially developed with Unreal 3, even though Silicon Knights wasn't paying for it and had stripped out all mention of the engine in Epic. So, federal court agreed that Too Human was an infringement of Epic's copyright and ruled in Epic's favor. In the aftermath, a judge ordered all physical copies of the game remaining destroyed, and Too Human was wiped from the Xbox marketplace in early 2013. A federal appeals court upheld all of these rulings in 2014, and Silicon Knights, following the even more disastrous X-Men Destiny, went bust in the interim. Now, they reached out to representatives of both Microsoft and Epic Games to ask what was up with that. Microsoft got back and said, "Players are a priority with the backward compatibility program. As with all our work at Xbox, we're always listening to gamers' feedback. Then Epic discreetly confirmed that they permitted Microsoft to release the game, but nothing further. Too Human may be an infamous title, but it wasn't really a completely broken game. It Metacritic'd a 65, although given the grade inflation at the time, that's as really good as a zero today. Before it even launched, apparently the head developer made matters worse by charging into NeoGAF to yell at people for not understanding his game. So finally, I think with maybe everything all swept out garbage wise Too Human might finally get a proper launch, proper game, and might find a player base willing to play it and enjoy it. Who knows? And see, this is where it brings me to my ultimate point. I had made a prediction a couple of days ago that I had hoped that Nintendo Direct, they would announce Scalebound, a game that was being published under Microsoft. I think it was a Xbox One exclusive that then was canceled in 2017. We saw trailers of it in gameplay preview in E3 2014, E3 2015, but nothing until 2017 when they said it was canceled. And just several months ago, as in the beginning of the year, we finally got reports that Platinum Games had picked up Scalebound, and it is going to be a Nintendo Switch game. So if Too Human can bounce around between this interim and have a whole bunch of problems of its own, hopefully that means that there's hope for Scalebound. And if there's anybody listening at Platinum Games, please finish Scalebound. It's a game I'm really looking forward to, a game I'm going to enjoy playing, just because I enjoyed the trailer, I enjoyed the gameplay, and I said this is a game worth playing. It's on my to-do list. So, seriously, get the game done, do a good job at it, and you'll have a very happy customer for life. I'll probably sink some good time and money into it, too. So, I don't know. Are you guys looking forward to Too Human? It's going to be free, so you're not going to have to pay anything for it. But, yeah, let me know down in the comment section. All right, on to our second-to-last article. I know there's a lot to cover today. How PC games overpowered Xbox, PlayStation, and others at E3 2019. So, Microsoft's and Sony's next-gen consoles are still a year away, but the PC gaming show near E3 demonstrates that more powerful PC hardware is already here. Did I happen to mention that AMD is just having a field day stomping IBM or Intel? If you have no idea what I'm talking about, you... I love it. I'm so happy that AMD is finally able to find its place in the world and tell Intel, hey, guess what? That market share that we gained, you lost it because you charged whatever price you wanted to. And then we just came up from behind and went, oh, look, we got market share now. Now, a few moments on Project Scarlet stole the E3 schedule at Microsoft's Xbox E3 press event, despite being barely more than a shot of the logo and some hyperbolic promise that it'll be the most powerful Xbox ever. And one would hope at this point. In truth, PC hardware at E3 today is already as powerful as the next Xbox or PlayStation consoles will be. While console games have dominated the show floor at E3 for many years, dig a little deeper and you'll find a big presence from companies like Intel and Nvidia, as well as high-end PC brands like Alienware. And I also like the fact that a lot of the PlayStation, I think it's either one or both, something about the next Xbox and something about the next PlayStation is going to have the AMD chip inside it. So awesome. One E3 open secret is that no matter which console they're for, many of those game demos playable at E3 are actually running on, get this, high-end gaming PCs, even if those PCs are hidden under tables or behind curtains. A lot of companies will be using PCs. They may not show them, but a lot of people in industry know that PCs are the majority of the hardware that's running the games. Said Kevin Wazlewski, CEO of Origin PC, a gaming and performance PC manufacturer. It looks the best, has all the best features, and is going to run the smoothest. Now, Intel's Lee Machin, general manager of gaming and VR AR sales, touts the sheer volume of PC gamers as one of the reasons it remains an important E3 category. And obviously so. Don't be fooled by the volume of press at E3 on consoles, he says. There's still many, many more people playing games on PC than on the consoles combined, and it drives so much of what you see here. But to find that sharp focus on PC hardware and software, you'll have to walk a few blocks to the biggest PC-specific event of the week, that being the PC Gaming Show. This annual event is held at a theater a short walk from the LA Convention Center. This year's show filled the 1,700-person capacity Mayan Theater and left a crowd waiting outside. Inside, the usual suspects from Halo to Doom were nowhere to be found. Instead, the crowd cheered for PC-centric games, some of which are also coming to consoles, including Zombie Army 4, Baldur's Gate 3, and a long-awaited Shenmue 3. No, the game sequel problem isn't any better on PCs, but the idea of cloud gaming, in which game content streams live from a remote server, is both embraced and feared by game companies. Opening the door to new consumers who don't own a PC or console gaming hardware is a huge potential opportunity, but who's going to shell out for a $500 console or a $1,500 gaming PC when similar experiences can stream from Google Stadia or Nvidia's GeForce Now to really almost any screen? Kind of makes you wonder. Most industry voices they've talked to are playing it cool for now, saying, well, when we see something like cloud-based gaming, which has been teased for many years but is becoming more of a reality, we don't really see it as a threat. We think it's going to help our business since we're on the high end of the spectrum. Anybody who has gaming as a passion and wants the best experience, well, they're really going to look for the best hardware. Something like Stadia, it's not really the best version of gaming, and I think Virgin PC's Wazilewski definitely cohesively answers that whole argument, in case you're wondering in the back of your head going, oh, I'm not exactly sure. Yeah, if you want the high end, if you want the stuff to drool over, the graphics to, you know, burn your eyeballs out in a PC, like I've said for years, undoubtedly years, I have so many people, like friends, family members, other people come up to me and say, Well, the Xbox and the PlayStation consoles, they're actually pretty powerful. Why don't you play with that? I mean, it can play any game, and it can play better than a gaming PC. And I sit there and I look at them and I go, no, I can't. No, I can't. You're going to sit there and you're going to tell me, oh, I can pay $500 for a really great, awesome console, or I can sit there with a nice, I don't know, I don't even have to go up that high for a nice, high-end gaming PC that runs much more smoother. I can do everything else on it too. Or if I really wanted to feel in the mood, I could drop a couple grand on it and I can get like top of the line, brand new, that will rival the console to smithereens. And then I'll still have a couple years of leeway and then some before the console even figures out how to catch up. So I guess we'll find out. So, yeah. So, just at the beginning of seeing things like cloud streaming, Stadia, Project xCloud, while there's a lot of excitement and interest in it right now, don't really see it changing the PC market, at least the enthusiast gaming PC market, for at least a couple of years, according to Intel's, director of, what did they say, Lee Machin, general gaming manager of gaming and VR AR sales. So, in case you didn't know, now you know. And now, you're better informed. Now, on to the last article we have for today. And I wanted to leave it till last, but did you know that Sony had an E3 announcement? And it happened without you noticing? Well, PlayStation is skipping E3, but yet, somehow, it's still here. Sure, Sony says it's skipping E3 this year, but let's take a look at the facts really quick. Within the past 8 weeks, the company has unveiled the PlayStation 5, teasing out details about its upgraded architecture and 8K capabilities, and clearly delineating the start of a new console generation. A buzzy new trailer for one of PlayStation's most anticipated exclusive games, Death Stranding, dropped 2 weeks ago, complete with a release date and details about a $200 collector's edition that comes with a life-size pod baby, along with people wondering, what the heck is this game? What is it even? Can I even this game? You know what I'm saying? That's not to mention the things that Sony is doing during E3. PlayStation is hosting its annual Days of Play sale this week, and even though it isn't holding a press conference, it's making headlines at other companies' shows. Final Fantasy VII Remake is a major title at E3 2019. We'll have to see how that one balances out as Square Enix just revealed a release date and fresh details, and happens to be a, get this, PlayStation exclusive. And that's just the start. Turns out, Sony doesn't actually have to attend E3 to do E3. So, that wraps all that up. And in case you're wondering, yep, they're still there. They're still there. And with that, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday except for next week. I'll be on vacation again, so keep that in mind. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button down below and by leaving a comment. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss out on the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor American. Remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much keeping awesome, guys. I'll see you on the flip side.